Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. Throughout this offseason, we've been lucky to have Joel Nellis, the head football coach at Brookfield Central High School in Wisconsin, host a series called Home Team, which focuses on our priorities off the field, our family, our health, our faith, and more. Coach does a great job catching up with coaches from across the country and addressing these priorities. There'll be related links in our show notes at blogs.usafootball.com and check out our systems for the best techniques in tackling, blocking, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. Let's kick it over to Coach Nellis.
Hello, coaches, and welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Today, we're going to be speaking with University of Wyoming offensive line coach Bart Miller. This is Miller's first year at Wyoming. Miller has strong ties to the Mountain West Conference. He was a starting offensive guard at New Mexico during his playing career and later as a tight ends coach at Air Force. Miller coached offensive line at Ohio in 2018. The Bobcats enjoyed a very successful season in 2018, posting a 9-4 overall record and a 6-2 record in the Mid-American Conference to place second in the East Division. Ohio earned a berth in the DXL Frisco Bowl in Frisco, Texas, where they defeated San Diego State 27-0. Ohio ranked number 9 in the nation in rushing offense in 2018, averaging just over 250 yards a game. The Bobcats also ranked 12th in the NCAA in scoring offense at 40 points and were number 16 in total offense with just over 450 yards per game. In 2018, Coach Miller coached Ohio senior left tackle Joe Lowry, who was named the Pro Football Focus 2018 Mid-American Conference Player of the Year and was selected as the PFF second team All-American. PFF rated Lowry as the third highest graded offensive tackle in the nation. Lowry was also named a 2018 MAC first team all-conference selection. He was joined by fellow senior offensive lineman Joe Anderson as a MAC first team. While coaching tight ends at Air Force in 2017, Miller was part of an offensive unit that averaged close to 420 yards of total offense during third in the Mountain West Conference. An average rushing of 304 yards a game led the league and ranked number 4 in the nation. Miller coached the offensive line at Minnesota during the 2016 season. The Golden Gophers enjoyed one of the most successful seasons in recent history, winning 9 games for the first time since 2003 and placing 4th in the Big Ten West Division. The Gophers earned a bid at the 2016 Holiday Bowl where they defeated Washington State 17-12. Miller's offensive line helped pave the way for rushing tandem Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. Minnesota averaged 183 yards per game on the ground, ranked 5th in the Big Ten, and they ranked 19th in the nation in fewest sacks allowed. Prior to Minnesota, Miller coached offensive line at Florida Atlantic from 2014 to 2015. Miller's offensive line at Florida Atlantic allowed only 21 sacks and 869 plays in 2014 and just 26 sacks and 887 opportunities in 2015. In 4 seasons before Miller arrived, the Owls had allowed an average of 31 sacks per season. As the offensive line coach of New Mexico in 2013, Miller helped create a new offensive system for the Aggies, in which the last 5 games averaged 34 points a game, 180 yards rushing per game, and 300 yards of total offense per game. He took over a line that had allowed 45 sacks the year prior to his arrival and improved the protection of more than half, only 20 sacks allowed in 400 plays. Miller's first coaching opportunity came at the University of Wisconsin in 2012. He took an offensive line unit in September after serving as a graduate assistant the year prior. The Badgers ranked number 13th in the nation in rushing offense in 2012, averaging 235 yards per game. The Badgers won the 3rd straight Big Ten championship, defeating Nebraska in the Big Ten championship game and playing their 3rd consecutive Rose Bowl. Notable players from his time at Wisconsin include Travis Frederick, Ryan Groy, Ricky Wagner, Kevin Zeitler, Peter Kahns, and many others. Many of those players went on to play and continue to play at the NFL level. Miller began his coaching career as a graduate assistant in 2010 at New Mexico, where he primarily worked with the offensive line. As a player in New Mexico from 2003 to 2007, Miller was a starter and a 2-year letter winner on the offensive line. He earned All-Mountain West honors as a junior and senior. The Lobos had a 1,000-yard rusher, 2,000-yard receivers, and a 3,000-yard passer in 2007. The Lobos appeared in 4 bowl games during Miller's career. He played for head coach Rocky Long at New Mexico. Miller completed his bachelor's degree in organizational communication from New Mexico in 2007 and obtained a master's degree in education in 2011. Originally from Omaha, Nebraska, Miller and his wife, Amy, have 2 sons, Barrett and Gunner.
All right, Coach Miller, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's jump right in and start with talking about the stars of your home team, beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
My wife, Amy, is her name. We met down in school. We both went to the University of New Mexico, and she was an athlete down there. And we kind of knew each other and kind of hung out in the same circles, but never really started dating or really spending a whole lot of time together until later on in college, towards the end of both of our careers. And then started dating, and it blossomed and took off and has been going strong ever since. So met in school.
What is her background, and what does she currently do, and you know, what kind of passions does she carve out time for?
She is big into fitness, health and nutrition. That's what she studied in school, and when she got done playing, she went right into working for various companies providing their general fitness programs. So she worked at General Electric for a while in Chicago doing fitness for them, and worked at a couple kind of bigger name gyms. Worked for short periods of time at places where she's from in Oregon, doing the same type of thing. So her background is fitness, and that's what she does now. She trains clients and does group exercise, teaches fitness classes, boot camps, those type of things. And that's where she's doing and what she loves to do. She carves out time to work out just about every day. We both enjoy outdoors, being outdoors. We both enjoy working out. That certainly helps. She kind of helps me stay motivated in that part of it. And I don't want, you know, we're very competitive. Both of us are very competitive. So I think that helps fuel things too. And she enjoys spending time with the kids, spending time as a family. And we're not big on, you know, technology and being indoors and stuff like that. We want our kids to be outside and enjoy that. And so she likes doing those types of things. We make sure we carve out time for all that.
What's a character trait that makes her so invaluable in your life?
Well, I don't know if there's just one. I think as everybody knows, great marriages and partnerships, you know, there's a give and take. And I think she's got many traits, but a couple that really stand out, the fact that she is competitive and loves this life, or loves the you know, sports and the those principles teach. And I think that's a big piece, because we're raising our family that way. We're raising our kids to want to be successful, to be proud in things that we're doing, that they're doing, and be the best that they can be at everything that they do. So I think that's a big piece, is that we share those similar ideals. She shares the same principles as a coach, and I think that goes a long way into this lifestyle. I also think you know, her patience with everything, with the kids, with me, with our life, I think is definitely a rock. And she's very kind. You know, she's very good with people. And I think that also helps as we have moved to different places. She can adapt and do good things right off the bat. So
that's great. Let's talk about the other members of your starting lineup, your kids. If you wouldn't mind sharing their names, their ages, their interests, and maybe what makes each of them unique to you.
Sure. We've got 2 boys. The oldest is named Barrett, and we call him Bear. And he will be five tomorrow, actually. He's born on July 3rd, so he will be 5
awesome.
Tomorrow. He's a big kid, big 5-year-old. People think he's 7 or 8. But
I can relate.
Yeah.
We got one of those here.
Really?
He
loves sports. Whatever sports kinda on in season right at that time, or what he's doing, he loves it. It's his favorite thing. So whether it's basketball in the wintertime, or We went ice skating during the bowl game last year, and of course he was on a big hockey kick for a couple weeks, and then he's in T-ball now, so he loves baseball and wants to watch baseball on TV. And then when football season comes around, he wants to obviously be a football player. So loves sports. He likes monster trucks, and he enjoys playing outside and playing with friends and all that kind of stuff too. So he's a very personable kid. He's a really sweet boy. Pretty physical, when we wrestle and things like that. So he's a good, very, very good kid. Our youngest is Gunner, and he is 2.5. And Gunner is kind of like his name. He's a little Viking. I mean, he can be really sweet, and then he has a temper and can go crazy in a heartbeat. But he can also kind of self-entertain, and he's also kind of our lover too. He'll cut up with you, but in the same breath, he might try to rip your ears off too. So, but they're both, it's amazing how that is. They're both different, but they're both, have similar traits too. They're both competitive. They're both physical, like to get in trouble, climb tree, the whole kind of typical boy thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they have different personality traits that make each one of them unique. So it's been a lot of fun. Challenging, but a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Next, we'll move into a section called We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of the important decisions throughout your coaching career. You obviously mentioned you met your wife when you were both students at New Mexico, but then you had, obviously went on to pursue coaching and GA there. How were some of those early negotiations with your wife or girlfriend at the time about your career move?
Well, that's probably kind of how it all started, and really what we've kind of based everything off of was my first job out of college was not in coaching. It was in the front office of the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team, and I was selling sponsorships and was a junior executive there and making really good money for a 23, 24-year-old. And we were kind of right on the cusp. The team was winning. I was living in Chicago, and it was kind of a glamorous life. I mean, you kind of ran the city. And Amy had moved to Chicago to be close. She had found that job down in at GE in the city, and she was teaching and doing fitness stuff there. So we kind of had a couple years together in Chicago, and this opportunity came to be a graduate assistant, and it's something I'd always wanted to do. And I think she knew that. And there were times, as exciting as my job was, that every Saturday I'd be in my office. Instead of watching the hockey game, I'd be watching college football. It just pulled at me, and we talked about it, and I had told her what it entails. That it's going to be a challenge, and eventually it will pay off. It will pay dividends. We're going to get jobs that we are meaningful, that we're coaching, doing what we love. Financially, it's going to be a very, very rough start. Hopefully that gets better, but there's no promises. But this is what I would like to do. But if she was not okay with that, I would say no. And I think just by me telling her that, we weren't married yet, we weren't engaged yet. I think that just kind of confirmed that, hey, we're going to be in this thing together. We're going to make every decision together. And sometimes it's not going to be easy, but we're going to do this thing together, because I'm not planning on getting a new wife or a new significant other or anything like that. And at the end of the day, this is what we do. It's not necessarily what your whole life is. She told me that during that discussion that you need to do this and I'll be with you. And so we did. We kind of took a leap of faith, and I was making almost six figures, a little bit less than six figures as a 23-year-old, 24-year-old. At the Chicago Blackhawks, I was somewhat commission based, so I was able to make more at certain times, and gave that all up to pay basically to be a GA. We didn't make anything. We made $500 a month and then had to pay tuition and rent. So it was quite a leap, and kind of took off from there. But that's how it all started, getting into this business, and we made that decision together. And then every decision after that, we've certainly discussed and weighed the pros and cons and gone from there.
All right. When discussing having kids, you know, in the mix of all this, how did you guys decide when the time was right?
That one was maybe a little more challenging. You never know. I mean, I don't know if there ever is a right time. You're never prepared. But the right. we felt like we wanted to at least wait to try to have children until I had an established position job, not a GA or whatever. I wanted to at least have kind of a grounding, at least a positional job where we had benefits, we had health insurance, we had some of those things. So we tried as best we could to wait till there was a little more, you know, solid foundation in the career before we tried to have children. And it actually worked out really, really well. I mean, even when our children were born, we're on off times, you know. So we've actually been pretty good at the planning stages of it, but it wasn't necessarily guaranteed that way. But that's what we were looking for.
Okay. when discussing a new job with your wife, and you've had a couple moves here, what are some things you evaluate together before making a decision? Obviously, your kids are too young to involve them in any sort of meaningful way. And maybe are there other jobs you've, you know, shied away from, or taking more money maybe wasn't the best option for you?
Yeah, and I think our mentality maybe has changed as I've matured and grown in the profession too. I think early on I was going to take anything. And if it was a bigger job or a bigger logo or bigger conference, it was a no-brainer. And, some of my early moves were that way. And kind of jumped right away. And as I've grown, and especially after we had kids, it became much more, maybe more significant decision. So I felt maybe a little more pressure. Didn't want to make the wrong decision. But, I think we're looking for now, what we're looking for, one of the big things is quality of life for me now. And I did have an opportunity, a couple opportunities actually this last year, and we had a good year running the football and had a couple opportunities, and some were very high paying. And I felt like the quality of life, I felt like just the time I'd be able to spend with my kids was not adequate enough. And if you're making, you know, a ton of money, what good does that do you when you don't get to see your family? When I pay that, I'd pay any amount of money to see my family. So why take something that you're not going to be happy with doing and miserable all the time just so you can say, you know, you're wearing this logo or you're making this amount of money or whatever, when your kids don't care about that. Your my boys don't care how much money we make. They live a very blessed life. They just want to see their dad, and they don't understand why I would leave every morning. I'm not gonna do that. I've done that as a GA. I've slept under my desk. I've done the whole, you know, get home at 2, leave at 5 thing. And to me, that's a waste of time. You know, if you're doing that, you're doing too much. You're not being efficient. You're watching your desk just because that's what some guy says you have to do. And I think that's a ridiculous way to do things. So. That was a big decision is turning that down because of the family aspect of it and wouldn't be able to see my family. I also look at how the staff is run, look at how the interaction is throughout the week, how much say you're going to have in certain things, how the style of play, a lot of these factors kind of go into it. And then there's some secondary things, location. You know, is it a good place to raise a family? Is it a good place financially to live and things like that? So those are some secondary factors, but the bigger ones are to me is quality of life right now and what it can do. And does it help advance our family? Is it something that is in the best interest of our family, whether that is not just financially, but, you know, together, can we be, you know, have the lifestyle we want? And then the financial piece does play somewhat into it, but that's not the end all be all, certainly, as I've shown. So,
no doubt. The third series of questions we'll call clock management, and that's how you spend time to blend family and football. Maybe when taking a new job, give our listeners one recommendation about moving and maybe one thing that you'd avoid.
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing is you do it together. We moved one time and I went out and found a place by myself and got it. And she, my wife, was not happy when she found out where we were living. So I think just involving her in that process and making it as much of a couple decision or a family decision as possible, I think is a huge piece of advice. Maybe that's too obvious, but I did not do that early on. And so I learned that lesson.
I knew when you said it, you were in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. So that was probably one thing, but we've gotten pretty good at it. We usually go, my wife does a lot of work, pre-house hunting trip, and kind of outlines what she wants. And we've used a realtor quite a bit, just because they can usually get you in pretty quick. But we've told her kind of, hey, this is what we're looking for. We like these certain houses. If you have anything else, let's go. And then so we're very prepared when we go in. We don't ever just go in unprepared. And so when we're prepared, when we go in, we kind of know what we want, and we're not afraid to say no. You know, we walk in the house, nope, and walk out or whatever it is. So that part, the house hunting part, all that kind of thing, I think preparation is vital, just like anything. And then the move piece is try to be, it's very, very difficult being away, from your family, and try to make time as much as you can. If you can steal a weekend to fly back, those things go a long way. And sometimes they're a pain, sometimes they cost money or whatever. To me, that's a small sacrifice. You know, whether you have to leave late or stay late or whatever, who cares if you get to see your family again, you know? And so I think those just making the effort to not just sit in the hotel room all week or all 4 months or whatever and go. I think the other thing we've made a decision to do is I will never just leave them. I know some guys it doesn't work that way, and I know a lot of guys, some of my good friends, you know, will go take a job and their families will stay back and it's very, very hard on them. They're away from they're living away from their family for a year or two. And we made a decision we'll never do that. So we kind of take on a mantra of bloom where you're planted. That's been kind of our little family saying, and we actually have a sign in our kitchen that says that. We try to take that for what it is. I mean, when we go to a place or we move to a new city, we get involved. The kids get involved in sports or t-ball or basketball or whatever. You know, we find schools and we try to get involved in the community center and find a church and everything else. So we don't just kind of, home to us is where we are. You know, I hear people talk about, oh, we're going home for vacation or going home for Christmas break or whatever. I am home. You know, this is my home. And I think when we made that decision, I think that makes things a lot stronger, maybe for us. And it doesn't work for everybody, I understand, but for us, that's what's worked.
Do you have any maybe what some people might view as crazy story of what length you did to get home during the transition? Like how, you know, maybe you flew home and you spent 2 hours, but it was worth it. I mean, anything like that where you really, you know, sacrificed a good amount of time and money?
Flights got delayed and I think one in particular I remember was coming, I was in Florida and had to drive to the airport, got delayed, and then had to transfer in Houston and then go to El Paso and then drive up another, you know, so kind of just long legs into for 12 hours, you know, 12 hours. Worth. But it, that was the part where you're like, is it worth it? And in my mind, it absolutely is. And, you know, so that's, nothing too crazy, just bad travel days.
Yeah. You know, a lot of guys talk about with their wife, they'll have a weekly dinner, you know, usually Thursday nights are prime time. And but is there any other small things that you do during your week, during the season to help your marriage?
Yeah, I guess I don't know if I do them thinking that. I think I do it just to really try to spend more time, as much time as possible. But I try to have maybe the boys up during the day for lunch if I can, or maybe you know, if the boys are in school, maybe during my lunch break, have my wife will come over, and we did this just during spring ball. She'd come over at lunch when the kids were in school, and we'd run the stadiums together, you know, and so little things like that where you can sneak things. Oh yeah, that was a mistake too. That she kicked my butt on that.
She won. Yeah, I'm guessing I'm gonna say she won on this one.
Yeah, but the little things like that where you can just to find moments to have some normalcy, you know, in your life during those kind of stressful times or really busy times, season, spring ball, those type of things. And again, I don't know if, you know, I'm thinking, you know, date night, I always kind of think of it as, oh yeah, this is what we do because this is the time we can do it. But some of those are just impromptu, you know, little get togethers, I think go a long way, you know, and having, I think, them around the complex and them, my, you know, my players seeing how I interact with my wife, how I interact with my boys, you know, and I think all that, I think that all helps. It becomes much more of a team atmosphere, you know, and there's not really a separation of church and state. It's, we're in this thing together and everybody knows that.
What is one thing you may do to help out with on the home front on a semi-regular basis, maybe to help with things organized or clean or whatever?
Yeah, I don't do a whole lot of cleaning, and that's when I try, she just has to redo it anyway. So she doesn't really fight me on that one. But things that go a long way are little stuff with the kids. You know, I think she's with them most of the time, and they're young enough that they're not the easiest thing to deal with for 12 hours a day. But so, you know, when I can take over bath time or put them to bed or you know, go outside and play with, wrestle with them or take them for a walk with the dog and that type of thing. I think little things like that go a long way with her. And so anytime I can do those things, I try to. Sometimes it doesn't always work, but that's definitely the goal. And that's what we try to do in terms of certain chores and things of that nature. You know, I usually handle most of the yard work and that type of thing, but every once in a while I'll come home and the yard will be mowed and things like that. And that's always kind of nice. So anything I can do to repay that, that's always good.
Always. You know, a lot of coaches seem pretty flexible at kids being around the office. You've been in a lot of different places. Anything unique or different you've seen with kids being involved in the program?
Some guys are better than others. Some guys, you know, some programs, I think, you know, when I was at Florida Atlantic, Charlie Partridge was our head coach and was a phenomenal head coach. And he wanted laughter and kids around all the time. And so it was kind of free reign, and that was fantastic. And the other places, some of the guys didn't have kids at the time. And so it was kind of, I mean, they could come up, but it wasn't necessarily as normal. And so I think that scared some guys away, but it was always better when guys could bring their families around, and as long as it's not, you know, abused and you can still get your work done and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I think just having them having access to you when they can, I think is big. You know, they get home from school or whatever it is. We live really close to the complex and happen to live very close to their school. And so, you know, I'm less than a mile from where they go to school. So if you get picked up at lunch or whatever it is, they can come over and hang out. And I think that goes a long way. And our coach it certainly is supportive of that. I mean, a lot of times I've worked for different guys, and everybody's in different stages of their life and different stages of their families. And sometimes their kids are grown, and sometimes they have young ones. So it all kind of depends on the situation. But most guys, I think, understand that you know, families are such a vital piece of this thing. And a lot of guys, too, I've found a lot of guys have shared stories with me about they did not do that. And it was a big reason why maybe their family fell apart, or they went through a divorce, or they went through, they look back and have regrets because of that. And so they don't want other young coaches to go through that same thing. And I found that a few different places. And so, you know, I think those are all good. I think the game, maybe the mentality somewhat in the office has changed, on a whole, you know, back when I was GA, it was, you know, kind of even the way we treat GAs is vastly different than what I went through and what I experienced, you know, and I think that's good. I think that's absolutely the way it should be. I mean, there's no reason why it should be the way it used to be. And I think the family dynamic of the program, the family dynamic that we tell our kids, and then we don't live that, I think that's pretty hypocritical. So I think it's all been much, much better in the last couple of years.
Awesome. I know this is a big question, and a lot of guys are, you know, it's a struggle for all of us at any level. How do you manage your phone time when you're at home?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know if there's ever a good way to do it. I mean, at some point, you're going to have to take phone calls when you're with your family, and especially during high peak recruiting times. But I try to make calls either at the office before I go or on my way home. And then if I'm on the phone or whatever it is, I'll just sit out in my car before I come in and try to do as much as I can. And then if anything, I can the new allotment a couple of years ago where they opened up texting is huge, because now you can, if you miss a call, hey, can I call you back at 9 when I put the boys down or whatever it is, you know? Yeah. So I think that has helped. But I try to do it away from home as much as possible. Now, that doesn't always be the case. And usually when I take a call at home, I get the stern look, or I get the, you know, can you be home now type of thing, like we all do. But and rightfully so. But at the same time, you know, there's things you can't avoid, especially in certain times of year. So that's what I try to do as much as I can. Or I'll take the phone outside, and or maybe I'll take the dog on a walk during a couple of those times, and we make a couple more calls. So things like that, little tricks like that to try to alleviate as much time as possible, but it doesn't always work.
No doubt. There's a common saying amongst coaches that the person with the marker last will win. How do you avoid being too analytical every week, and maybe as a staff, and therefore spend unnecessary time preparing in the office?
Sometimes as a staff, I don't know if you can, because certain guys have different opinions of it, and that's where it gets kind of long when you're sitting in the room together and just go over and over and over. Somebody's got to say something. But I believe individually, I believe as a staff, you got to trust your evaluations, you got to trust your breakdowns and your game plan. You know, make a decision why you like certain things, and get a plan together. And then you can't be afraid to make adjustments either. You know, I think guys want to have the perfect play call. You're not going to always have the perfect play call. So, you know, you'd be able to make adjustments. So much of what I do for preparation is the physical component, being able to execute what we do and be great at it. And then from a mental side throughout the week, you know, I do a lot early in the week. So Sunday night, Monday night, or our late nights. And that's where I try to get as much done on paper as I can, and then spend throughout the week kind of nitpicking it and getting the guys ready for it and some of those things. And especially when it comes to pressures and protections, we do so much of that with the guys that they're very well prepared mentally going into it too. So I think if you trust your evaluation and you trust kind of what you're doing and what you guys do as an offense, it should be a very effective work week. It's when guys try to pull things here or do stuff you don't do. It's not your life. When you base your game plan off of stuff that you don't really do, and you just try to fill up your board or fill up your call sheet, then I think that's when you get into a troubling situations, and that's where it gets long. You know what you like, you know what you're good at. This is what we do. This is how we can do it. This is how we can disguise it. This is where we can attack them and then trust it and let's go and prepare that week and then have some in-game adjustments, have some things. Hey, if they come out like this, this is what we have to get to. And so much of it, what we do, I feel like we second guess ourselves or we feel like, hey, we're done at 9:30. We can't be done at 9:30. We should be here for another 3 hours or whatever. I think that's ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
You get done, let's go. You don't go home. You know, and there's no need to reinvent the wheel and there's no need to make all these decisions late. You're going to have to remake them all again in the morning anyway, you know. And I'm big on not doing things twice, right? Like
yeah.
if you do all this work on Sunday night, okay, you can review it in the morning, but why have to, do I have to redo it? You know, that doesn't
right.
make a lot of sense to me. So I think being together after you've had time apart to kind of put, as a staff I'm talking about, as you have you've
yep.
individually gone through and put your ideas down and then you get together and kind of share them and then go through it, I think that's a very effective way because there is some things that maybe you don't see and guys, the other guys see or have questions on or they like certain ideas that maybe you didn't catch and you can kind of build this thing up and then again, it's what you do. I'll never forget, actually, I was at Wisconsin and we had a coach that had all these different things that he did at another place. And Bob Bostad said, hey, you know, that's great, but this is Wisconsin. This is what we do. And it's always kind of stuck with me. Like, yep. you know, yeah, there's a million different ideas and there's a lot of great ideas, that, a lot of things that are successful and people believe very strongly in. But, you know, if that's not what you guys are as a program, then there's no sense in trying to put that in, you know. So I think that's a big piece of people forget that so much. Do what you do and be great at it.
No doubt. The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense and hopefully provide some bigger picture things that can prevent a coach from losing what is most important. The first question is, can you share a struggle you've had to overcome as a family during your career and what lessons you think other coaches could learn from it?
I think maybe the hardest thing that we've had to experience is just the lack of stability that you know, it's not something we've wanted. You know, I've moved a lot. I've had a bunch of different jobs and we haven't necessarily looked for those. Some of them have been by choice. Others have been by necessity, but you know, I've won the Big Ten twice in the Holiday Bowl and we got let go, or had to move on after. And I think that's hard. That's hard to do. It's hard to come home and tell your family you're fired for winning. And it's something you don't have any control over. And so I think those things are tough. Anytime you go through a transition, whether it's positive or not, it's still, you know, stress on the family, stress on your kids and on you. And I think, you know, our faith, especially for me, my faith is important to me. And you know, our family depends a lot on each other. So I think those have been probably our biggest struggles professionally that have affected our family, is just some of those transitions. And it's not something that we've looked for. It's something that has evaded me. Stability has evaded me in my career so far. So hopefully we're in a situation now where we can be here for a long time and go from there. But I think the best way to handle it, like I said, is again to rely on each other. It's not a, hey, I'm going to go off and do my own thing and you guys move when you can. It's a family deal. And I think when you make everything a part of who you're fan, and selfishly, you can't just jump at the knees. It's got to be, you know, there's got to be some sacrifice on your end too. And I think, you know, when I realized all that, I think things got a lot better. And our decision making process got a lot smoother too. So those are probably the biggest challenges we faced as a family in coaching so far. Some of those hard nights, those hard days where you didn't have, there was so much uncertainty, and we didn't know what we were going to do. You know, you trust in your faith, and you trust in each other, and good things happen. So.
What is one important aspect of parenting that you think carries over into coaching?
Tough love probably is the best answer in my mind for that. You know, is you got to, there has to be a measure of discipline. There has to be, you know, this kind of, but not a battle, but the kids have to know that there is an order. There's a measure of what is expected of them. There's a standard. You know, there's a certain way we do things, and the expectation. And if it's not there, you're gonna face the consequences. And we're gonna get that out of you, however that is. And the other thing they need to know is that you care about them, right? And that's just like at home. I mean, the kids, you love your children more than anything, but at the same time, they can make you madder than anything. And so there's got to be ways you can't just give them everything. You have to make them earn things and work for things and teach them those principles in life. And I think that certainly carries over. Is you want to be hard and disciplined with your players, but at the same time, they've got to know that it's coming from a foundation of love and trust and respect, as opposed to, hey, I'm going to torture you for 3 years. It's hey, I'm going to make you better. This is the way you can. It's not going to be all sunshine and roses and all that, but at the same time, you're going to be great. And this is, you're going to have a very enjoyable experience if you put everything you have into it. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing, is just that tough love principle. Those guys got to know you care about them, because if they do, they'll do anything for you. As hard as you make it, or as hard as it is, if they know that deep down you care, they'll do anything for you. So at the end of the day, that's all it is. Just getting those guys to play as hard as they can.
How do you, you know, a lot of guys will talk about, hey, we have our guys over for a meal, you know, which is, I think, great. You know, there's guys, you got to do that. You know, got to feed the boys. That always helps. But how do you make them feel valued outside of their performance on the field? Like, they know you care about them, whether they play for you or not.
That's something I've actually struggled with, to be honest with you. Because, you know, the guy I played for was not that way 90% of the time. But then, you know, every once in a while there'd be a flash or something that really showed he did care. And you know, I think that's something I've kind of struggled, because I try to emulate him as much as possible. That's all I know in coaching. And so,
right.
I think I've hopefully grown a little bit more throughout my career. I think I certainly struggled with that earlier. I like to think I'm better than that now. And just being personable with them on interactions, you know, even just seeing them in the hall and saying hi, or how's knowing a little bit about what they do, you know, outside of football. You know, I've got a player now who's in a class, thermodynamics, which I mean, I wouldn't even be able to sign up for the class, let alone take it. And he, you know, he asked him how his tests went, and asked him about certain things about it, and he starts explaining it to me. I have no idea what he's talking about, but at least there's some interest.
Right.
You know, and what he does and what his chosen profession will be. So I think little things like that go a long way with guys. You know, a guy, you know, I go back to the one time, or a time when the guy I played for showed, you know, how much he cared. I got pretty seriously hurt when I was a player, and you know, he came over, my position coach came over and took a knee beside me on the field and just kind of held my hand, didn't say anything, just kind of was there. And it worried me, because he would never do that unless it was really bad, you know. But at the same time, he genuinely cared about you, and that showed there. But that was not the norm, you know, where I played. And so little things like that go a long, long way. And so I tried to do more of those things. I try to be a little bit more personal with them and let them know that, hey, we're in this thing together, guys. If I fail, you fail, and vice versa. You know, so the whole unit is run that way. I mean, there's an expectation, there's a standard. If they know that, I think you being consistent and being the same guy all the time, you can't just turn it on and off. You know, I mean, there's an expectation, there's a standard to play, but you know, you got to be able to be you too. And so any little bit of to show that you're actually a person, not just a drill sergeant, I think helps create some of that bond with those kids too.
What is one thing you've changed maybe in the last 3 years that has helped you be a more effective coach?
I think maybe that what we just talked about. I think the fact I've kind of let a little more of my personal life maybe into the room. You know, my kids have been around a little more. I've kind of shared a little more stories to be a little more relatable, maybe, you know, to players, as opposed to just standing up and being a lecturer or this authority figure. You know, you still have to have that, but at the same time, I think I've tried to become or tried to maybe share a few more things than I would have in the past to become a little more relatable. Like, hey, you know, I understand what you're going through, but this is what we did, or this is a story from years past or whatever it is. And I think that maybe has gone a long way with just developing the culture of that room. You know, the unity of the chemistry of the room is that they know they can depend on you. They know they can trust you. You know, it doesn't have to be a thing where they like you. In fact, that's the last thing that you should be worried about. They got to trust you. You're going to put them in the best position to be successful, but you're going to push them hard. But at the same time that they can come to you if they need anything. And so, again, cause we're all in this thing together. And so that, I think that's maybe what I've changed as I've matured maybe and gone through some of my growth as a coach, is just how I relate to the guys. And maybe that has always been my strength, but maybe that's also kind of where I tried so hard to be a certain way and it didn't really work in when I was in Florida or in New Mexico or some other, you know, some of these other places. And so I think just growing as a coach that way has helped me.
The last question I call victory formation. You know, when the outside world looks at a coach, they will judge them usually based on the wins or losses or the accomplishments of their players. But the potential legacy a coach can have on his players and his family really has a lot more lasting value than anything that really can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that maybe you couldn't do in any other profession?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that I would like to do and be known for and is making an impact on men and young men and what it means to be a man. You know, being able to work outside the toughness that it takes, the discipline that it takes to sacrifice for the betterment of your family. And I think it's important guys know, you know, how fiercely I love my wife, and they see that, how important it is for me to be a good father, a good husband. You know, being proud of everything you do. You know, I get guys turning papers that, you know, or their game tests or whatever, and you can't even read their name. I mean, if you can't sign your name right, you know, it's about the way, being proud of the way you practiced, of course, but and the way you played, but also maybe how you talk to your mother. I mean, how do you carry yourself? How do you dress? And I don't need you to be, you know, buttoned up and tucked in and all that, but you know, you can't just shuffle into the complex looking like a slouch either. You know, I mean, there's got to be some pride in the way you do things as a man. You know, and if you are, you know, you don't want to, nobody wants to go to class, but if you gotta do it. It's what your job is, right? You got to go to class. I don't always want to go do this or to go on the road recruiting, but you do it because it's your job and you take pride in doing your job well. And I think the more guys understand and maybe see that through my coaching, I think I will have made an impact, you know, on what it means to truly be a man and introduce elements of faith, introduce elements of, you know, discipline and hard work ethic, all the foundations of what I was taught, but also learned along the way too. And I think when guys know that, I think where society is going to be a lot better. because you got a group now of real men, and as opposed to these kind of posers in life that they bail when things get hard. And that's if I can have any impact on that, that would be the legacy I would like to have.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time, Coach Miller. I know you're on vacation season right now, so we look forward to watching Wyoming this year, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck in the future.
Thank you very much, Coach. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis articles, and coach. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.